So talk about the male reproductive system. First of all, do we know who ate the poison apple?
Adam.
No.
Poison apple.
Poison apple.
Oh, we don't know.
No, we don't know.
Oh, it's Snow White.
Snow White.
Uh-huh, I was just thinking that came to mind after all.
Who had the dwarves?
Snow White.
Can you name any dwarves?
Yeah.
Isn't there a sleepy?
Yeah.
Oh, sneeze, not a sleepy?
Yeah,
it's a sleepy.
No.
Oh, that wasn't a sleazy. And who is the one with the pumpkin? It's going to turn into a pumpkin.
Cinderella.
So let me ask you this. How fast does your typical bee do his wings in a second?
Something like 10,000 beats per...
More?
You don't really know, do you?
No.
How about your typical hummingbird, how many times does it wet
tons.
Its wings?
Quick.
Yeah. You really don't know, do you?
No.
So in other words, you know more about the fairy tales than you know about...
The birds and the bees.
That's where we're going. Yeah. Okay, so this is going to be about the birds and the bees. So of gametes, gonads, and also gynecology, sexual reproduction is a way to produce kids. Does this say surprise to anyone?
No.
No. Two gametes, or germ cells, also what are they also called besides germ cells? Sex cells, right? And would you agree with that?
Yeah.
What?
What?
Would you agree with that?
Yes.
What would you agree with?
They're sex cells.
That's sex cells. Yeah, that's why they put beautiful women on stuff. So we come together in a great event called fertilization. The male gamete is called the... Sperm. Female gamete is called the
egg.
Now notice that we call it here a secondary oocyte. Why?
What's a primary oocyte?
Good question. What's a primary oocyte?
Mitosis.
From mitosis, good. And when did this mitosis occur?
Mitosis occurs.
In the female, when does she get her eggs?
Before that,
yeah. When?
Born.
When you're born.
Yeah.
Yeah, females have all their eggs they're ever going to have, right?
That's right.
So that means that they're now in their primary stage. As Paula says, they're going through mitosis. So they're going to be in their primary stage. That's why we call them primary oocytes. But they're stopped right at metaphase. So they're not going through anaphase and then telophase yet. So that's the primary oocyte. And then that primary oocyte is going to be released, right? When it gets released, then it's going down the fallopian tube. It's going to be called a what?
Secondary
oocyte.
And I have a question. What do they say that the younger you are, the better eggs you have? I mean, aren't they the same because you're born with like a certain amount of eggs?
Go on.
Isn't it because the older you get, the older your eggs get also?
Yes.
Since you already have them, it's not like
yes.
Born with
yes. And therefore, it's more could be more problematic later on because they are going to go through the rest of mitosis. So if there's any kind of injury in there, then of course it's going to be affecting the egg. And then of course you're going to be having like a defect, right? Or a possible defect. So let's look at the process of mitosis. And we know that we have our cell. It has how many chromosomes? 46. And 46 is going to divide into what? 46 and 46. So we're getting two cells as a result of mitosis. Two cells that are going to be exactly alike to what? The first cell. Yes. Okay, so that's the process of mitosis. This is going to be occurring in the gonads. And the gonads are going to be the testicles in the male and the ovaries in the female. These are analogous tissues. What does that mean?
Analogous.
Analogous. same, right? They're sort of the same, they're coming from the same tissue. They don't have the same function, but they have the same tissue. And we'll talk about that in a moment. But gynecology is a branch of medicine that deals with the female nether regions. Who deals with the male nether regions?
Urologist.
A urologist. Will a female ever see a gynecologist? I mean, will a female ever see a urologist?
Yes, she's got problems with
If it's extreme, sure. So the role of sex chromosomes are going to be that one cell is going to be containing 23 pairs of chromosomes, or as we said, 46. And 22 of these pairs are going to be called autosomes. The other one pair is going to be called the sex chromosomes. And they come in two varieties. One's X, Y, and one's X and X. So we have X, X for the what?
Female.
Female. X and Y for the what? For the male. Okay, who has more genetic information?
Female.
Female. This explains a lot, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What's that? Detail-oriented, yeah, because they have more chromosomes. Turns out that the Y is missing this little part, right? Mm-hmm. In addition, the Y is also one of the smallest chromosomes. When you look at the chromosomes laid out in a karyotype, that's what they're called, karyotype, and the biggest chromosome is going to be first, and then they continue down. So number one chromosome is the biggest. So as you continue down, you get to the last chromosome, which would be number 22. Then you look at this guy, and he's even smaller than 22. So there's very, very little chromosomal material in the Y. So X's and X's definitely have more chromosomes altogether.
Is that why the males are usually a little bit more animal than women?
Hmm.
A little more primitive, a little more...
Good speculation. Possible? Possible? Maybe. Who knows?
Explains a lot.
Explains, yeah. Now, given this scenario, however, we can see that the male or the female is going to be determining the sex.
Male.
Male, why?
Because he has a Y.
He has a Y, yeah. So he can contribute this. And the female, all she can contribute is the X. So when we look at one individual, there's going to be a combination of the two, right? The male and the female. It's half of one and half of the other. So sex of the child is determined by daddy. Now there is some sexual differences, of course, but the thing is that we all started off the same. We all started off as what?
Females.
As females, and then something went wrong for some of us. So we had to have the same equipment, if you will, at least the same potential equipment in the beginning, or else. You know, we have to figure out whether we're going to become a male or a female. So we're going to be developing. And what's going to really determine this is going to be your SRY gene, which is going to be the sex-determining region on the what? On the Y gene. So the sex then is going to be determined by the Y, because if you have X and X, you know you're going to become a what?
Female.
Female. So you're really not going to be changing from female is really what's happening. So if you have the Y gene and you have this switch pulled, then you're going to become a male. But if you don't have that switch pulled, even though you do have the Y, now you become a what?
If you don't have it pulled, you become a female.
Become a female, yeah. So we're all on the road to becoming females, unless we get the switch pulled. And then we become a male. But some unfortunates have this switch not pulled, slightly pulled, or not pulled at all, or a little bit pulled.
Hermaphrodites.
So we get hermaphrodites with that, right?
Wow.
Okay. So the secondary sex characteristics develop at puberty to attract a mate, such as pubic hair, axillary, and facial hair. This somehow is attractive to mates. Body morphology also. Now that makes sense to me, because the female has that extra layer of fat, giving her that nice morphology. Put it that way. And the males then, of course, get a lower voice from their high voice. And of course, the low voice is very attractive, baby. I guess. So we notice that we have the organ systems are going to be changing a bit. We're going to be having the X external genitalia is going to either evaginate or invaginate. Invaginate means to go in. Evaginate means to what? To come out, like exit, right? So evaginate out, invaginate in. So in this case, when we look at the male, he's going to do what?
He's going to evaginate.
He's going to evaginate. The female is going to what?
Invaginate.
In fact, we even have a remnant of that word when we look at one of the structures on the inside called the
vagina,
yeah. Invaginate, vagina. So we're going to be invaginating that. So we notice that if we invaginate, then we get folds. The folds become the lips. These lips are called the major and minor lip, or the labia minora, or the major one would be the labia majora. These lips then in the male will not invaginate but evaginate, so they start to come out, and as they come out they fuse in the middle, becoming what? The scrotum. Yeah. The erectile tissue called the clitoris in the female is also the erectile tissue in the male called the what? Called the penis, right? So erectile tissue there, erectile tissue there. This invaginates, so making the clitoris, and this of course evaginates, making the penis. So those are going to be then analogous tissues. The labia would be analogous to what?
Scrotum.
And the clitoris would be analogous to the what?
Penis.
The penis. Also, if we look on the inside, we can see there are also changes occurring there as well. Since we have, originally what they call it is indifferent gonads. So indifferent because they're going to be having the potential to go anywhere, becoming one or the other. So let's look what happens here. We have the indifferent gonads, and we can see that we have what looks to be two round, like pecans, with these attachments, these tubes. If we're going to become a male, these tubes on the side will become dissolved, and these will remain. These will become the testicles. If we're going to become a female, the tubes on the side will be dissolved, and then you're going to be having these tubes, which are ultimately going to be called the fallopian tubes. And we've got the ovaries. So what's going to happen with both is that these guys are going to come out to the side and fall down and go right into the pelvic cavity, right? Whereas these guys in the male are going to do what? They're going to fall further, yeah, into the what?
Scrotum.
Into the scrotum, exactly.
So the fallopian tubes and the prostaterns are the same thing in the beginning?
Well, we have this guy called the paramesoderm duct. That's going to become the...
Oh, I
guess. But then this guy is the other guy, whatever that is. And this guy is a mesoderm duct. And this guy. So they're different. Yeah, they're different. It's different wiring, or different tubing, we should say. Okay, so we see what's going on the outside, and then also, of course, this is going on the inside. It happens about 12 weeks. It's pretty cool, huh? 12 weeks, a lot of stuff happens. So the descent of the testicles occurs when the testicles are around the kidneys, as we saw, and the descent is going to be pretty soon. It's going to be finished by 28 weeks. They're going to be descending into the scrotum. If they don't, it's called what?
Cryptorchidism.
Yeah. Cryptorchidism. It sounds like a made-up word. Anyways, if you don't have your testicles descending, then of course you could get sterility. Also cancer. The body would consider the testicles as a foreign substance. So they're going to attack it. So you could get cancer from that. Why sterility? Temperature. Too hot. Yeah, sperm needs temperature lower than the body temperature to form. So they're located outside the pelvic cavity, and that's essential for a lower temperature needed for sperm production. So if you're living in Florida and you're a male, your testicles will tend to be lower. But if you're an Eskimo, what's it going to be like? They're going to be hugging. Or just got out of the pool. They're going to be hugging, right? It all depends. But throughout the day, they're going to be varying depending on what the ambient temperature is, what the temperature outside is, right? So you want to have it at the perfect level. So one of the major things of that I would recommend for people that wanted to have kids and they couldn't was to have the male wear boxer shorts. Because most of them wear these tight things, right? Of course, that doesn't allow for the up and down kind of movement for perfect sperm production. I actually had one kid born because of that suggestion, that one suggestion. Just one. I wanted to name after me, but they didn't. Because I really didn't have that much to do with it. Now, when we look at the testicles, we see that we're going to have an inside to them if we make a transection. We see there's going to be a number of tubules that are going to be sort of wrapping around each other. We call these seminiferous tubules. This is where mitosis is going to be occurring. You can see it's very, very small, and there's lots and lots of them. Because of that, we're going to be producing lots and lots of sperm. It's estimated from 1 to 5 million is produced in a day. The sperm then is going to mature in this structure above the testicles, and that's called the epididymis. Epi means what?
Above.
So epi is above. Didymis, D-I-D-Y-M-I-S, means twin. So literally, they are above the what?
Twins.
Above the twins, yes. Because typically, testicles come in twos. A right one and a left one. Now, you can get testicular cancer. The treatment is amputation, and it's highly curable. So that can happen, and usually the individual is able to have children even after that. Because, you know, cutting it in half, you know, now you got 2.5 million sperm, it's still viable. What's his name, the guy that was the...
Lance Armstrong.
Lance Armstrong. He had that. He had his testicle taken out. What's that?
John Cruck
from the Phillies, he had that too. Do you ever notice the Lance, ever since the operation, did you ever see him ride? Always. And probably the Philly guy too is the
throws low. The day that John Cruck retired, the headline on the sports page of the Philadelphia Inquirer said John Cruck took his ball and went home.
Oh,
that's wrong. You're right, that's bad. I had this one student who I was talking about this, and he was very, very serious. Mm-hmm. Came up to me afterwards and says, "You know, that happened to my dog." And I said, "Really?" He goes, "Yeah." And he's very embarrassed by it. I'm like, "Very embarrassed? Dog?" He goes, "Yeah." So I bought him a prosthetic, testicle, so that when he goes out in the park, you know, other dogs don't laugh at him, I guess. No, he was serious. He's one of those kind of guys.
Yeah.
That doesn't joke about that stuff.
Wow. Trust me.
Yeah.
Did you offer it?
Yeah, I've heard that.
Why?
For
my dog fit, they asked me. No, I'm fine. How does that cost anything? They offered
glue.
Jeez, yeah, when they bang around in there,
no, it's, I don't know. Okay, it's too weird.
Thank
you.
Who knows, right?
The back of the trucks.
Oh yeah, the back of the big trucks.
That
was this is so gross. So let's talk about the male anatomy. We look at the external anatomy here. We have, first of all, the penis itself is going to be ending in a foreskin. The foreskin is going to be wrapping around the glands. An individual has this taken off through a procedure called circumcision, which means to cut around, circumcision, right? So they're going to be having that taken off. And there is some speculation that, number one, that having a foreskin makes the penis more sensitive. There's other talk that having a foreskin also makes the penis or the glands more susceptible to disease, such as yeast infections, if the person's not hygienic enough. And turns out that if you have a circumcision, you probably are not, I mean, your risk of having cancer of the glands goes down like almost to nothing. Yeah. But if you do have a foreskin, then it's pretty high, or relatively higher. It's definitely going to be higher. And the treatment for cancer of the glands, of course, is the same as for cancer of the testicles. Yeah, so that's not really a popular kind of thing.
You could rather die with cancer.
Yeah, I could rather, yeah. Imagine they're judicious, though. They just take out the cancer. They don't go any further, maybe. I don't know how that works, but... So there's positives and negatives. I actually had a friend who was, his son had to have it done at like 14.
Ooh.
And it took him out. But it was because of the hygienic problem.
Gotcha.
Yeah. So here we have our testicles, and they're going to be in the scrotum. And we also have this area, which is going to be called the external inguinal ring, or the superficial inguinal ring. This whole area is called the inguinal area. Now, what you have in the male is you have a superficial and also a deep inguinal ring. We have it in the female as well, but in the male, it's patent, or they're opened. The reason they're opened is because of what? You have an external, you have an internal, and they're lined up. Why?
So the tubules can get through.
Well, but what happened first, before that happened?
So you dropped?
You know, the belly.
Yeah, the testicles dropped, didn't they?
Oh.
They went in the internal, and then they went through, or the deep, and then they went through the superficial, so they made those two guys line up. So because they're lined up, intestine can go through those two holes and go into the scrotum, and that's called an inguinal hernia. So a person lifts something really heavy, it's possible that the increase of abdominal pressure will push their intestine right through the two rings. Now, is this likely to happen in a female?
No.
No, because the rings aren't lined up, are they? Nothing ever went through them to line them up. So they don't have testicles. So, but it's still possible for a female to get an inguinal hernia. It's rarer, but it can happen. So how do you test for this? Well, you would take your little finger and go right where the scrotum basically has its, apex. And you take the scrotal skin and you just slide up along the cremasteric muscle. And you go right into the superficial inguinal ring, have them turn their head and cough. If there's a piece of intestine hanging down, it will tap against the finger each time they cough. Because what are they doing with coughing? Yeah, you're increasing the abdominal pressure, right? So it's going to be pushing against there. So that's the diagnostic thing. The role is asking, why do you have to turn your head?
Right in your face.
What?
So you don't cough on you.
Exactly. So you don't cough on the doctor, man. No, nothing physiologic. You are down there, though. I don't know how it really works. The cough. Not really going to cough. Yes, it coughs. It would fall on you. Anyway. Okay, so that's the story with that. Now, the path of semen is not going to be the sea. Thank you for that. So the path of semen is going to be going from the testicles to the epididymis up this thing called the ductus deferens. It's also called the vas deferens. So when we have an operation to cause an individual to be sterile, who is male, they will cut these guys. They'll go into the scrotum and go into the cremasteric muscle, pull the vas deferens away, and then just snip it, and then just ligate it, you know, burn one end and burn the other, and then just push it back in. And so sperm should not be able to get to its its spot, which would be, of course, in the ejaculate. Problem with that is that people that get it have a higher incidence of heart disease. They don't know why, but there might be an autoimmune thing or something. And I understand it's fairly reversible as well. So that would be a vasectomy.
Wouldn't it be like there's no sort of buildup or anything because of the block?
That's the speculation. Maybe there's a buildup in the testicle and it caused an autoimmune thing. The body, you know. But yeah, you would think it would. It's still going to be produced. So we have the vas deferens. So of course, females do not have a vas deferens, as we saw in that thing I showed it with the overhead. So there is a vas deferens between a male and a female. Okay. Then we're going to go into the ampulla of the seminal vesicle. Seminal vesicle is going to give the fluid that's going to be the actual semen. So you can have semen without sperm in it, and that's still going to be the ejaculate. So the individual can still have an ejaculation without having it have sperm in there. And we also have another gland in here called the bulbourethral gland. This bulbourethral gland will be a gland, really it's like a cleaner. It's going to be cleaning out the penis. Why does it need to be cleaned out before the semen comes by?
Yeah,
because the urethra in the male is used for two purposes, for peeing or urinating and also for ejaculation. So you can't mix the two. So you'd want to clean that out. So the bulbourethral gland sends out its secretions, which are going to be a pre-ejaculate, and then the ejaculation would be behind that. The real ejaculate is going to be coming from the seminal vesicles and also from the prostatic secretions. And the seminal vesicles being off to the side probably aren't as significant as the prostatic secretions because the urethra goes right through the prostate, indicating that the prostatic secretions are important. They don't want to make any mistake here. You go right through there and they're going to be dumping their secretions into there. Right. So spermatogenesis in the testicles is in the seminiferous tubules. Sperm then gets stored in the epididymis. They mature there in the epididymis. During ejaculation, the sperm travels from the epididymis to the ductus deferens out the urethra. You remember urethra, named after Urethra Franklin. Think. It's trying to do me. Think. Trying to do me. So the accessory glands, as we already said, are going to be the seminal vesicles, prostate, and also the bulbourethral gland. This is the way we remember the flow of sperm, stop Ted's ED, erectile dysfunction, and his PMS. Mm-hmm. So stop, the S stands for seminiferous tubules, T stands for testes, then we go into the epididymis, then we go into the ductus deferens, and then into the seminal vesicles, and then the ejaculatory duct, which takes us into the what? Prostatic urethra, then into the what? Why do we call it membranous urethra? Because it's right around the muscle, right? Remember the semi-membranosus muscle was mostly tendon or muscle? Muscle. So semi-membranosus or the membranous urethra. And then finally we go into the what urethra? The spongy. The spongy urethra is called that because it has what around it?
Spongy.
The corpus. Yes, corpus spongiosum. Very good. That's that thing right there. So when we look at the penis, we see that it looks like a sad fly. This is going to be a cut through the penis. We see that we have his eyeballs and his sad mouth. The upper chambers, these two upper chambers are called the corpus what? Cavernosum. They literally are caverns that are going to be filling with blood. So what happens is that the venous system, as you see here on the top, shuts off and the atrial system increases its flow, so the individual gets an erection. So it's atrial blood in, no blood out, no venous blood out. So there's that stasis of blood, if you will. Now, as you know, Viagra will increase the circulation to an individual who has problems with getting an erection. And they caution the individual to make sure that their erection leaves within 4 hours. Well, what could happen? You'll have gangrene, right? So you actually have a stasis of blood that long could cause the tissue to die. So that's not a good thing.
Is it even worth the risk?
Yeah, you know how it goes, man. It's like sex, or it could fall off. Sex. Yeah, you know. Also, you got to remember, Viagra is going to cause heart attack in people that have never had any heart problems ever. So, death or sex. So you got to weigh the two. It's a tough one. Depends on how old you are. If you're older enough, you don't care. You just want to die anyways. You got to have enough sex. Yeah. I guess it's always that way with drugs, though. You always kind of weigh one against the other. So the penis houses the urethra, and that's what that yellow thing is there. And notice that it has a slight erectile tissue around it. But I say slight because we don't want the corpus spongiosum to be a great engorgement or a great engorger of blood. Why? You're going to cut it off. And you need that for the ejaculate to go through, right? So you can't have it be as much of a erectile tissue as the corpus cavernosum is. Now, the nerve supply to the penis is going to be sacral 2, 3, and 4. And easy to remember that because sacral 2, 3, and 4 keeps the penis off the floor. The autonomic nervous system controls the penis. You have the parasympathetic, which is going to cause the erection. We say to point. And also it causes urination, so it's going to be peeing. Whereas the sympathetic causes ejaculation or shooting. So remember point and shoot. P for parasympathetic and also?
For erection.
Erection and?
For urination.
And the S for sympathetic and what? Ejaculation. So it seems that we really need operative here both of the autonomic nervous systems, right? First of all, we need the parasympathetic system. And you remember that system was the relaxation or excitation system?
Relaxation.
Before you can get the
Excitation.
So it's relaxation before excitation. That's the reason that we need massage for the male, maybe candles, nice music, maybe a drink, maybe some kind of hand holding before he can get an erection. That's usually the way it goes. Yeah, you got to definitely have all that going on, or else he'll never get an erection.
Too nervous.
Yeah, if you're too nervous. Yeah. Right. Males are more sensitive than we think. It's possible for an individual to have erectile dysfunction. Now, if the individual does, then we need to figure out whether or not it's psychological or physical. If the individual is able to masturbate, then it's obviously, and he's not able to perform with his partner, it's obvious that it's not physical. It's got to be what? Psychological. So then the individual would want to address those issues. But in some people, they will notice that they can't get an erection no matter what they do. But it still could be psychological. So how do you figure out what it's going to be? Well, you can use the stamp test. So you take postage stamps that have those little serrations on them, and you on the flaccid penis, and you put the stamps around it at night. And then in the morning, if it's broken, then you know that the person has psychological or physical erectile dysfunction.
Psychological.
Because a male normally will have an erection once or twice or even three times during the night. And it's just a normal phenomenon. And that being the case, then, if the individual has the broken stamps, then we know that it's not a physical thing. If it is a physical thing, then the best thing for that would be chelation therapy. You heard of chelation? therapy?
I went with the boy that I used to, that I'm his nanny, he used to get this treatment and I used to go with him. It was horrible.
Was horrible? Yeah. Just sat there with the...
Sat there with, you know, for a three-year-old.
Sure, patients get that also.
Oh, for a three-year-old, yeah, that would be tough, mm-hmm. A three-year-old. Chelation is where they give you an IV of a solution, and it's usually EDTA, which is the same stuff in salad dressing. It helps the salad dressing to maintain its consistency. So it's really a chelating agent. And what a chelating agent, chelate means claw. So what it does is the solution goes into your system, into your vascular system, atrial and also venous system. If there's any clogging there, such as calcium buildup or like atherosclerotic plaque, it'll go in and actually chelate or eat out those guys with the solution. And the thing that's so neat about having chelation for erectile dysfunction, if it's physical, is that you're dealing with very, very small what? Small what? Small arteries, right? So all you need is a few treatments and it's going to work, like about five. So $500 is how much it's going to cost you. And then you get your erection back again. I mean, I would think most men would spend maybe even half that to get their erection back. No, they spend a lot more than that, right? Of course. So if it's physical, that's the best thing to do would be the chelation therapy. Now, coupled with that, the fact that erectile dysfunction may precede the onset of heart problems by about 3 years. So if a person can't get an erection, that may be a sign of other vascular problems, right? Mm-hmm. Such as in the heart, which is dependent upon, you know, our vascular system to a great degree. So therefore, if a person has erectile dysfunction, he may not want to be taking Viagra because it's possible that a heart attack's coming, right? And Viagra causes heart attack. So you can see the conundrum. It'd be better to fix the problem. And with chelation, it's possible to, if it's going to take the plaque out of these smaller vessels, imagine what it could do in your heart, right? Mm-hmm. Just have to have more treatments. That would be the only thing.
How is Viagra close contact?
I don't know. Just one of the side effects. It's probably its effect on the vascular problem, you know, vascular system.
It's a
vasodilator, yeah.
So what's dying in the heart if it's dying in the vessels?
Probably what's happening is that you have an overabundance of blood and that's causing problems. Something I can think of. Yeah. They say that it can happen to people who have no heart problems. It just manifests. So it's got to be something that, you know, I'm not really sure what the mechanism would be, but it's definitely probably related to its vasodilatory effects. So that's the story with ED. Oh, also, men over 50 can have a male menopause. They can go through that. The characteristics of this is going to be buying cars that look like penises. So you do that. Or convertibles, you know, those kinds of things. So that's really going to be what's going to happen then.
Midlife crisis.
Midlife crisis, yeah.
Corvette,
man. Go team.
Stingray.
Yeah, Stingray, right. Aptly named. Okay, so more on this. If you don't use it, then of course you're going to lose it. So the idea is that since the male does have the prostate gland, if more sex the individual has, the better for the whole system to work. Less problems with the prostate, more sex, less problems. So that's been definitely proven. So we know we have to have more sex and you'll be better off. Use it or lose it. I missed it.
Why is that trying to kill him?
That's good, man. I like that. Okay, through the process of mitosis, body cells are reproduced. 46 chromosomes are formed. These are called somatic or body cells. Meiosis does not produce body cells, but produces what? Sex cells. So when we look at the process of mitosis once again, we have one cell, 46 chromosomes, gives us what?
46.
2 with 46. If we do the process again, now we call it meiosis, we're going to have these go into 23. So we don't have just two cells from the process of mitosis. In meiosis, we have how many cells as a result? We have four, right? So now in meiosis, we have four cells. Process of mitosis, we get two cells of 46 chromosomes each. In meiosis, we get four cells of 23 chromosomes each. These 46 chromosomes from mitosis is considered a diploid. So 46 chromosomes considered diploid. If you cut that in half, we now call these half haploid. So it's literally half of the diploids, right? So meiosis will produce haploid cells, and they're going to be four cells of 23 chromosomes each. So these are going to be body cells, the ones from mitosis, and the haploid cells are going to be sex cells. So mitosis, or meiosis, is mitosis done twice. The number of cells from the process of mitosis is going to be 2. The number of cells from the process of meiosis is 4. The cells from mitosis contain 46 chromosomes. This is called diploid cells because the cells contain two sets of chromosomes. Cells from meiosis contain 23 chromosomes. These are called haploid because the number of cells are cut in half. We remember this by remembering my toe dips in a cool pool, me happy.
I actually like that one.
Do you really like that
one?
I
like my toe dips.
Really? Yeah. I always thought it really was stupid, but I kept it because some people like it. Yeah. So mitosis is going to give us diploid cells, and me happy means meiosis is going to give us haploid cells. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So meiosis is mitosis what? Done twice. So we have a mitosis. What I did not write here is mitosis. Or meiosis has this process, and we call that this process meiosis 1. It's very, very similar to mitosis. This process here is going to be called meiosis 2. So mitosis 1 is going to be like mitosis, except in metaphase, the guys meet in the middle and genetic crossover occurs. So on this side with meiosis, we're going to be getting chromosomal crossover. So what is genetic crossover? It's going to be where you're going to have like a guy like this without a head. And so what happened is his arms and his legs, where they would cross. When that happens, then the genetic information would also go to the other side. So my left hand would be on my right arm. My right arm would be on my left hand. So when you come back again, now I got my left hand here, my right hand here. So that you can shuffle, if you will, the genetic information. You sort of see it? Let's do this. We have chromosome. And you're going to go through mitosis, so you're going to have this. But let's say... Yeah. So let's say this, oh I know, let's make this one all black. So when you do the genetic crossover, what happens is that you have this, let's say just this, that's crossed over, and this is crossed over. So it used to be all black on one side, and now you've exchanged one side for another side. So now you come out with a different chromosome, don't you? You've shifted the material. Okay, this is to cause variety. Very important in our gene pool. And our gene pool is really a fictitious kind of view of all of our genes together. So right now we're looking at the gene pool. So any population just has a gene pool, right? And it's housed in each individual. Well, so for our gene pool to be better and better, we need variety. That's why it's important for races to have sex and for different individuals from different families to have sex. We don't want people that are in the same group to have sex. You know, we don't want people marrying their cousin, for instance, even though they're attracted to him because he reminds them of himself. You know, can't have any of that. So you want variety is the point. More variety, the better. Okay, so that's the first thing that we're going to be doing, to make variety. The other thing that we're going to do is the female only produces how many eggs in a month?
One.
Just one, and yet she produces how many?
Lots.
She produces four. So she's really producing four eggs from the process of meiosis, but she only has one that's viable. So now what have you done if, like, let's say this first one had a defect, and the second one had a defect, and even the third one had a defect, let's say Down syndrome, something like that, some chromosomal thing. With this process, we're going to nix these three, and this one's going to be becoming our secondary oocyte. So the three that are nixed that had the disease, now the disease is not going to manifest. And that's called chromosomal shedding. Did I mention that there?
No.
So it's chromosomal shedding. So not only do we have this genetic crossover for variety, but we also have the chromosomal shedding for variety as well. So these two things are going to try to inhibit any kind of mutations occurring, or at least from manifesting in the next generation in the gene pool.
Is that meiosis or mitosis?
This would be meiosis. Meiosis one. So we have the sperm itself, which is just a genetic carrying system, sort of like UPS for the sperm. We have an acrosome, which are going to have enzymes in them to get into the egg. We're also going to be having a delivery system that's going to have the flagella, which is a whipping tail, which is going to allow the sperm to swim and to get to the egg. It's very, very small. And the semen itself is going to be about 2 to 5 milliliters of fluid expelled during an orgasm. 10% of it is sperm, so 90% then is not, so you could have an ejaculate still and not even notice that there weren't sperm in it. Normal sperm count is 50 to 120 million per milliliter, so you multiply that by 5 and you're getting around 5 million. If you have less than 25 million, considered infertile. So, other components of the semen are going to be fructose, and fructose is one of the sweetest sugars. That's going to provide energy for sperm motility. How?
Sugar rush.
Sugar rush.
Well, they break it down.
Yes, into?
Sugar's a carb, right?
Yeah. Break it down into? Into energy, ATP, right? The whole aerobic respiration thing. We also have fibrinolysin, which is going to liquefy the semen within 30 minutes. The semen is going to be really the transport medium for the sperm, right? So you really don't need the semen once it gets into the vagina. All you need is just for the sperm to continue on. And the prostaglandins stimulate the female peristaltic contractions, which assists also in sucking in the sperm up the fallopian tubes. So when we look at sex, we know that it's going to be the nerves that we described. And that's it.
I like that picture. It's fine. It's all good.